Good morning, good afternoon, or maybe good evening for those who are watching this episode. This is a Let's Humanize Work, the Workplace special, and we are going to talk about leadership. But before I'm going to do that, I'm definitely make sure to introduce my guest. But before I'm doing that, I want to have a moment for the Grammys, right? I don't know who watched. I didn't watch the full episode show, but I did watch some snippets because I'm a fan, and many of my artists won. Like Kendrick Lamar won big. Beyoncé definitely won her Lifetime Achievement Award, and it was time that she won. And also, I want to take a moment for Alicia Keys because she won the Dr. Dre Award. I think it's some kind of a lifetime award for being a producer or for being an artist. And she made sure to put DEI on the map and how she was highlighting all the different voices that are needed to make us whole, but also what can we learn from that? So keep an eye on the afternoon. I'll definitely share a post and a snippet of what she shared about that. But also know that I want to challenge us all, right? We read the news, we all hear news, we all hear certain things. When news outlets are saying that one out of the eight companies are deactivating their DEI, it has a way to trigger, a way to consume the information because it's very negative, right? But I also want us to challenge ourselves. Is the news real? And is it real? What is the other side of the equation, right? Because the outlet could have also highlighted seven out of the eight companies is still keeping their DEI alive, right? And then again, also listen back to what the Davos leader mentioned when a leader's mentioned when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion. Costco is still keeping strong with DEI. Apple is still keeping DEI active. Goldman Sachs is also keeping DEI active. I'm not sponsored by them, by the way. I'm just mentioning, a couple of names. But know that seven out of the eight companies is still keeping DEI active. Why? Because at the end of the day, they get a better revenue, they win, and their culture is better, right? So keep that in mind and challenge your critical thinking. But today, I'm going to address today's topic because today's topic is about leading with purpose in dynamic workplaces. And I'm not here alone, as you can see, right? I have here Simon Fagg, who facilitates purposeful leadership, and he's also the host of After Dinner Leadership. I've been a guest speaker on his podcast, so definitely listen to that episode and also keep an eye on his podcast because he has numerous guest speakers, numerous topics as well for you to train your leadership muscles. And Simon has been coaching leaders across the world from Santiago to Sydney for over 25 years, and Simon continues to learn about communication from his wife, from his kids, and his granddaughters as well. So thank you, Simon, for being here.
It's my pleasure, Vivian. It's lovely to be with you again. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. So let me start with the first question. Why do we need to humanize the workplace?
Yeah, thank you. I love contrasts in language. So where I go with a question like this is what's the opposite almost? What is it? What's it mean not to
That's a good one.
humanize? So I'm thinking things like industrialize or mechanize the workplace might be the opposite of humanizing it. And so three words come to mind around humanizing the workplace. I think the first one is sensitivity. And just a greater sensitivity to others and their circumstances and what they bring in terms of strengths and skills. Vision. So I think that's something about humanizing the workplace is giving people hope about what the future holds.
Yes, definitely.
And the last one is around trust. So I'm also thinking like, what do machines not need? They don't need vision necessarily. They don't need trust. They don't need sensitivity, or that they do different things. But humans, I feel need those three things: sensitivity, vision, and trust. So feeling trusted and offering trust to others, being trustworthy. Those are kind of some things that come to mind around that
You're
topic.
bringing up a valid point regarding to trust because at the moment right now, I feel like the currency of trust is lost in translation. And I'm not only referring to what's happening in the US, even though that's the main thing though, there is this trust thing going on where let's say that the companies who are demanding their employees to come back to work and not work remotely anymore. What's your take on that?
I think you need to be sensitive to the needs of each organization, because there are particular roles or situations where there is advantages of people coming together in person and feeling and kind of recognizing the power that has. And certain occupations would require more of that than others, I guess.
I agree.
Yeah. And I do think there's an opportunity for organizations to remain in that flexible state. So prior to COVID, I worked with several organizations that wouldn't ever imagined any of their staff working flexibly from home. Yeah. Then when they were forced to, they suddenly, hold on a minute, we can still function. When our workforce were completely remote, we still did a reasonably good job. In fact, productivity increased for a short period. And so there is, I'm not a big fan of polarized positions on anything, frankly. There's always a gray area that you find, and to try to get that balance. And this is one of those where I think the workforce needs to realize that there is advantages often to come in person and actually meeting with people and kind of getting a sense of them. But equally, life and its demands, and also if we think about things like disability and these kind of things, that the opportunity for people to work in a more flexible way clearly will help them to bring their best selves to work. But I think it's all about communication at the end, and trust is built through good communication.
True. And I also caught balance and flexibility from what you said, that is the main key driver. It's not either or. Somewhere in the middle, where we meet each other in the middle, right, and have a better communication, better understanding for why, so that you can support each other, whether it's the leader, whether it's the team members as well. You can support each other by meeting each other in the middle as well. And I'm seeing a comment from Ryan. Hi, Ryan. Thank you for joining this conversation as well. And I want to go to, since I brought up the Grammys, which is all about music, right? I want to ask you, what's your favorite song that energizes you?
I find this also tricky, because it's a bit like asking which of my children is my favorite. And it's kind of a depends on the moment. But where my mind went, first of all, if I want a really rousing, energizing thing, if I'm feeling a little bit like my energy is low and I want something to pick me up, I love a song called From Now On from The Greatest Showman. It's one at the end, is like, it's almost like a redemption song. It builds some momentum from these things I've done that weren't very good through to the future's different. And I just love how it builds, and I love to sing, so I can turn it on full
volume. Are you going to sing?
No, I'm not. No. But do a bit of karaoke, you know, when I'm listening to that, it always makes my energy come up. So that's one that I love. And then the other thing that, if I'm wanting to focus, so that's a different form of energizing, I guess. I heard a speech some time ago by a gentleman that mentioned the power of birdsong to help you to concentrate rather than listening to music. And I found that to work really well for me. So it's a natural way of helping me to have energy. Perhaps even when I'm working at night, putting birdsong on, I'm not distracted by the lyrics or a tune. It's natural sound. And I found that to be really useful as an energizing. It's a different form of music, I know, but there we go.
No. It's quite valid, and also it brings up what I do when I am doing deep focus work. I listen to raindrops. I have a special app that can orchestrate the nature sounds or the bird sounds, and I love to listen to the raindrops so that I'm focused, right? And it has a timer for 30 minutes or 45 minutes or for how long I want to do some deep focus work to really be energized and not be distracted. Because sometimes when a song comes up, you can be distracted by the lyrics or stand up or do something else, right? So I totally get that. And it also helps with you being productive and tapping into the happy hormone. So I totally agree. Thank you for sharing that side of
what's yourself. What's your track, Vivian? What's your, what, do you have a another another track?
I have, as an empowerment track, I have Bigger by Beyoncé.
Okay.
As a happy track or as an energizer track, I have Happy by Pharrell Williams because I'm happy.
Brilliant. So, yeah, great.
I think all the parents have heard that song, so I'm not going to repeat that as well. But that song, yeah, when I put that song on when I celebrate for something, when I'm happy about something. Yeah, thank you for asking.
Right.
So before we dive into leading with purpose in dynamic workplaces, I want to talk about your podcast.
Yes.
I am curious into why you started the After Dinner Leadership podcast, because it's not before and not during. After dinner, why?
Well, I've spent the best part of 30 years working with leaders in conference rooms, boardrooms, syndicate rooms, and often these workshops can be on a residential basis. So we're working together for 3 or 4 days. And what I found was some of the richest conversations were when we were speaking after dinner. So we'd have dinner together, and then we would, you know, maybe there's some alcohol involved by, I don't drink, but some of the guests, you know, kind of loosen up a little bit. Yeah. And then people start talking about their life more fully and their family and their community and just what they're doing outside of work, what they're doing in work, the real challenges and opportunities that they're facing. And it feels richer in some way. And I've always endeavored to try and get that conversation in the room when I'm facilitating. But I thought, as a podcast, if I could have that same sense that we've had dinner and we're relaxed and we're not taking ourselves too seriously, but we're talking about really meaningful things. That was my intention with the After Dinner Leadership podcast. And the title was like, we're going to talk about leadership, but it's as if we're just relaxing after dinner.
When I noticed the title, I immediately understood the assignment, but also immediately understood that in those occasions, you know, after the end of the workday, we connect with people on a human to human level, right? We take off the professional mask and we turn on the personal mask and we connect with that. So when I saw that title, I immediately understood that this is another way of connecting with people. And also, you know, when you mention food or dinner or something else in your title, I mean, who doesn't love dinner? Who doesn't like to have those after dinner conversations? Because oftentimes that's the most heartwarming or the most, the best conversations can happen. So I immediately understood it. And I wanted the audience also to understand where you're coming from. But we are talking about leading with purpose, and it's, the title is dynamic, but I can also mention, refer to VUCA environments at the moment right now, right?
Absolutely. And
first of all, how do you define purposeful leadership, and what inspired your interest with this approach?
Yeah, so you can see there's a bit of a play on words here again. So again, if I look at that contrast point, so what I find that many leaders can be purpose empty and rather than purposeful. And so I really want to ensure that my mission when working with leaders is to help them to be full of purpose. And what I mean by that is that they have a real sense of clarity about who they are as a leader, first of all. So this self-leadership, you know, what are my values? Am I living to those values? Where am I trying to take myself to? Am I aware of the strengths that I've got that I'm bringing to any role? You know, whether it's a leader with a capital L or leader with a small L, you know, what strengths am I bringing? Do I really know what those are? And also, am I aware of the limitations that I have and where I need people's support and their strengths to help complement mine? That there's something there first, so around the purpose. And then that then cascades into, have I got clarity around why my team exists? What's our true sense of what we exist for? And not just to get paid or to move a widget from A to B, but what's our reason for being? And can I as a leader help my team to really connect with that purpose so that we are all working together on that common purpose to achieve that. Mm-hmm. And that that's the origins of purposeful leadership, is that a leader has real clarity around their purpose, and they are able to then inspire their team on a journey, if you like, that's going to take them to a more productive and effective workforce.
And energy is contagious, whether it's bad energy or good energy, energy is contagious. So I love the fact that you started with what if you lead with being purpose empty, right? Instead of being purpose empty, we want leaders to be purposeful so that they can be like the Olympic flame, where they touch different flames in different countries at the same time and amplify the purpose that they want, you know, driven as a common goal. So I do really appreciate that you mentioned that. But then also you wanted to address quiet leadership. Can you talk about what is quiet leadership so that I can also ask you the follow-up question?
Yeah, for sure. So actually, maybe there's a piece that I haven't mentioned on the purposeful that's important. Mm-hmm. There's something about being moored in, how can I best put it, ethical or moral moral moorings, moorings, mm-hmm. sorry. What I'm, these timeless virtues why am I saying that? Because I think some of the behaviors that I see on the political landscape sometimes has me concerned that person maybe somebody they could say has a lot of purpose.
Yeah.
You know who they are, but I think are devoid of necessarily being connected with what other people feel and think and trying to create unity. Mm-hmm. Is something that I think a leader can do really well and can also do it poorly. Anyway, coming back to the quiet leadership, what do I mean by that? Then it's, I'm really contrasting the quiet leader with what you might call the more charismatic leader. Mm-hmm. I really want to emphasize there's nothing wrong with charismatic leadership. You know, and both quiet leadership and charismatic leader have got pros and cons. Mm-hmm. What I want to talk about quiet leadership is I find I speak to a lot of leaders on a coaching basis who are saying, in fact, I had a situation last week, someone saying, like, do I really have to shout and scream about the good work that I'm doing and these type of things and in order to get ahead? And do I really have to act in an aggressive way in order to climb the corporate ladder? Mm-hmm. And ultimately they've got to choose, you know, the situation that they're in, whether they want to, you know, make those changes to their style. But I want to applaud and perhaps elevate the importance of a more subtle leadership approach that may not immediately, like in the short term, be achieving a result, but I see them build momentum and influence over long term, and they get stuff done, but just in a very different way. It's not as dramatic, it's not as loud, it's not as immediate sometimes, but they're investing in relationships and making sure that they're asking questions and they're finding out what other people think, and they're trying to build that strength from understanding what's really going on rather than just dictating a message down the line and expecting people to comply. They're building commitment over time. And that's the bits of quiet leadership that I want to encourage. And I think even those with a more charismatic slant can use elements of that quiet leadership to strengthen their leadership impact in a business.
When you look at role models, influencers at the moment right now who are well known, who would you define as a quiet leader?
Interesting. So I've got a bit of a counterculture view in some respects, because I think some of the people that we see in the public eye, I can't make a comment on enough because I don't know them. I don't know. I've never worked for them. I mean, you've got a public persona. I'm even slightly reluctant to make comments about Trump. I know I've inferred some stuff already, but you know, I've never worked for the guy. I've never seen him close up. We've got this social media image. It was caricature almost. Mm-hmm. So what I've seen in practice is people that I've worked with in teams and that I've coached and I've seen work in business, and very few of those have got a social media presence, or but they run and they're CEOs of businesses that that are very successful, and they're team leaders and they're regional leaders. And these are the people that I've seen in practice and have seen the impact on that they've had on their teams. And so calling out, you know, so classically, if I go back a few years, I think of mm-hmm. Nelson Mandela as somebody as mm-hmm. a quiet leader. Yeah. So I can call him out, and having read his biographies and kind of understanding some more, I think he was a really good example of someone that moved to quiet leadership. Actually, I don't think he started there. I think he moved to quiet leadership. And the impact that he had beyond himself and beyond South Africa was immense. Mm-hmm. And so I'll call him out as a world leader. I don't know that there's one that I would put up there at the moment that I would absolutely be able to say, but I can think of several business leaders that I work with who absolutely are quiet leaders and are achieving amazing things in their organizations. I was working with one last week with his team and across EMEA, and just, he's not dominating. He's clear. He's listening. He's trying to build, you know, the strength in the team, building capability within the team, building trust within the team that are delivering and outperforming the market. And
so you're already answering the question that I wanted to answer.
Okay.
Wanted to ask. Sorry. But the qualities of a quiet leader, what are the qualities that make them effective, right? You mentioned active listening, you mentioned building, you mentioned also not really having a presence on social media, where I am going to counteract on that, but share your answer and I'll share my perspective as well.
Yeah, I'm not saying that they don't, how am I going to put this? Okay, so I'll come back to the original question. Then we'll come. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the social media bit. So, I think the word I haven't used yet is humility. So, I again, it's a word that can be often misunderstood. In fact, I dug out a quote that I really like from a book called Leadership Egonomics. Humility is the intelligent self-respect that keeps us from thinking too much or too little of ourselves. It reminds us how far we have come, while at the same time helping us see how far short we are of what we can be. And that's the type of humility I love, if this, you know, self-confident without being completely devoid of sensitivity to others. It's a balance of service rather than selfish. It's making sure that they are engaging other people in dialogue rather than thinking they're the only ones that are correct. And I've seen that time again build tremendous results, but also great leadership strength as people are listened to. So at the very heart of a quiet leader is that ability to read what other people are thinking and feeling and be able to respond actively to that. They are getting things done, but they're not necessarily making a big noise about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's a con to that, in that they might then need some help with self-promotion and mm-hmm. and actually getting their message out. But that's the downside of it. But in terms of, I see them doing brilliant work in organizations to you know, very productive, getting things done, but they're just not not making a big noise about it.
Yeah. And when it comes to big noise or when it comes to social media, I do understand where you're coming from. Like, they are not always visible on social media, whereas where I coach people is to amplify your visibility the way you want it, right? So if you are a writer, write. If you are a talker, use speech to text so that it can help you creating that foundation so that you can write. And also find, you know, with the technology nowadays, use what works for you so that you can still share the good things that you're doing in the pace that you want to share, right? So if you post once per month, which I don't agree with, but okay, if that's your pace, then that's fine. If your pace is once per week, you share a post once per week, that's fine. I believe also as a leader, it's not only your duty or part of your job to inspire only within your team, but also inspire others around you, others outside of your team, so that people are seeing and reading and watching the good work that you're doing, because you never know who you might inspire along the way. So that's the message that I wanted to share to counteract to what you are sharing, because we live in a digital age where a lot of people are basing things on TikTok. Not that you need to be on TikTok, but there are different ways of you sharing the good work that you're doing, and why not use the different platforms that work for you so that people can see or read something about you. So doing the excellent work that you're doing.
Yeah, and I agree. And again, I don't know this guy, but there's a guy called Lee Chambers that I follow on social media.
I know him. Yeah, okay, so, he's a great guy. Yeah.
Okay, but he appears, again, this is where I don't want to make a judgment. He seems to be a quiet leader from my perspective.
I don't
know whether he is for sure, because I've never worked with the guy. But that is an example where I've seen him building influence in more quiet ways, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. And I agree. I don't know him personally, but I have been in conversations with him, and I agree that from the first perspective or in the first look, I see a lot of elements that you are mentioning here regarding the qualities of a quiet leader. So I want to go back to your podcast and ask you, what was one of the most surprising insights about leadership you heard from a guest regarding listening?
I've thought hard about this. I think I may have shared with you before, Vivian, that one of the most, so I asked my guests, what three leadership lessons do you wish you'd learned earlier?
Yeah.
And the most common response is a version of, I wish I'd learned to listen better earlier. So I wasn't expecting that. So that was surprising in itself, that it's the most frequent of responses that I get. Now, what's the one that's most surprising? It's actually, I'm going to take one that's fresh. I did an interview last week with a guy called Spencer Holt. The episode will be out in a few weeks' time. And again, you could probably tell I love wordplay. So he talked about soulful curiosity, and I hadn't heard that phrase before. I often refer to it as deep listening. And I quite like this variation, which is about soulful curiosity. So clearly you're curious about the person, but it's like you're listening to the whole person. You're not just taking the words, you're kind of trying to understand the resonance with their feelings and really trying to tune in to what's really going on. I love that as an expression, and it's fresh in my mind, I guess. And as a subset to that, he talked about listening with the idea that you might change your opinion, which also is really good, rather than listening to think about what you're going to say or to counter the other person's view. I really like that idea of like genuinely listening to someone, thinking, actually, I'm curious about this, and I could take on and be willing to change my mind based on what I'm learning. That's a really cool level of listening, I think.
Yeah. And also what I wanted to add regarding that, because oftentimes when people are in a conversation, right, there is this expectation of immediately responding to what somebody shared. But if that person has shared something new or something very huge that you need to talk about, then, or need to think about, or need to let it marinate, you can also say that to that person, like, what you shared, I appreciate it. Can you give me some time to let it marinate, or let me think about it, or process about it? Because oftentimes it seems like we are expecting people to respond immediately. And that's not, you know, when you respond immediately, in some cases, some people need more time to think about it and to really counteract the pros and the cons, but also think, what does it mean for me, and come back with valid questions. So I would like to give you all the permission to give that to the person. So when you are in a conversation and you need more time to process it, respond to that person and ask them, you know, can I have some more time to think about it instead of responding immediately? Unless there is a deadline, then I can understand. But still, even within a deadline, there's still some time left to respond and react. Do you have something to say about that, Simon?
I do, actually. I think it's really wise. And in the Google age that we live in, I think it's yes. discouraged. You know, you kind of everything's quick and fast and yeah. that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Again, ties back into the quiet leadership. There's a sense of just pressing pause and slowing down and not expecting someone to, if you want someone to change their mind, they're not necessarily going to do it just because you have an alternative opinion, but for them to yeah. have space to think and then come back and discuss. That is a form, that's listening, isn't it? It's not, mm-hmm. listening is not just not talking. It's allowing things to process and being able to have a dialogue. I think it's fantastic. Great suggestion.
Yeah. So we have been talking a lot about active listening or deep listening or soulful curiosity, as you said from your yeah. previous guest, right? So what are steps that leaders can take to improve their active listening skills?
Yeah, I mean, this is a quest. I love it too. I'm still on this journey to improve it myself, and I'm mm-hmm. really pleased to be on that journey. A couple of things that I'd like to share that may be a little unusual, but I see them as practical. The first one is the power of walking and talking.
Mm.
And again, a little bit harder to do on a Zoom call or over Teams, I recognize, but not impossible actually. But
you can do it outside and still yeah, sure. not be visible, sure. right? Yeah.
Yeah. But there's something powerful in being able to walk alongside someone and to have a conversation with them. I think something that happens there is we put phones away mm-hmm. and we put yeah. the technology away. We're actually broken free of the tech side and we're outside and we're just talking about things. And I've had some really rich conversations as a consequence of deciding to do that. So just our small team here, our one-to-ones, weather permitting, I'm in the UK, so it's not always ideal, but I've got a one-to-one with my colleague later and we're going to go for a walk. You know, that's mm-hmm. the format. That's our mode of doing it. Phones away and we're talking. We've had some really rich conversations with each other as a consequence of walking and talking. So that would be a practical thing that I've seen to mm-hmm. work really, really well. And in terms of the actual language piece, I think there's something around demonstrating that you're listening mm-hmm. that is helpful for the person. So if there's a way that we can play back, paraphrase, test our understanding, again, it's a very practical way to show that we're trying to understand, we're trying to listen to the other person's dialogue. And I a form of that is also to bring sensing into the conversation. You know, so I'm sensing that as a prefix to something, you know, have I read that right? What am I getting wrong? Mm-hmm. These kind of phrases are ways of picking up the energy, the feelings, not just the mm-hmm. words that you're playing back, but the sensing of it.
It's also a way of checking in with each other, right? To understand, did I hear you right? Or did I consume it in a different way of what you shared? And also making sure that you let the other person know that I'm really listening to you, right? And also
yes.
one of the things, and I don't know if it's the same for you, but doing these live streams or being a podcast guest speaker or speaking, you know, with other people, it has forced me to listen to what you say, but also to really listen and make sure that, is that what you shared, is that aligned with what I said, or can I counteract it, or can I support it so that I'm activating my listening skills? So for those of you leaders who love to get their thoughts known out there, why not, you know, join a podcast or maybe sign up for me or for Simon's podcast as well. You never know when you might be a guest speaker, but also you never know who you might inspire to listen actively to you. Definitely podcasting, listening to podcasting, but also being a guest and hosting this show has helped me to train my active listening skills as well.
I agree.
I see a comment from a guest as well. So Tanya, thank you for joining the session, and know that you can watch the replay whenever you want. So I hope that next time you'll be there, but make sure that you watch it. And I'm curious to hear from you what you found from the rest of the conversation. And coming back to not my final question, but my almost final question. Do you believe that quiet leaders face unique challenges when it comes to being recognized or valued in traditional workplaces, and why?
Yeah, I think we may have touched on this a little bit already, but I do agree there are some challenges associated with it, and there are systems and structures, legacy systems and structures, that maybe reward and encourage somebody that's more obviously visible and vocal, and if I can call it self-promoting. Mm-hmm. So I do think that, and clearly there's an opportunity for people that perhaps are more introverted or quiet to develop skills that help them to communicate clearly the successes that they're having, and not just accepting that that's my job. Again, it comes up in coaching quite a lot as well. Well, people should recognize what I do. People should just observe
exactly.
it.
Well,
it's like the system you're currently working in your organization, that is not how it works. So you're going to mm-hmm. need to be able to speak up and to not just think that everybody's going to notice these good things. But that's particularly true when someone is more junior in the organization. So I do see leadership with a small L is a really important thing. I may not have a leadership role, a management position, but I can still lead in the team and get have an impact, have influence, initiate actions, even if I'm not the manager. I mean, that's a really big part of me. So I think starting that early can really be useful for when you then have a management position to still make sure that you are speaking up about the impact that you're having, and you're very aware that your influence is being felt beyond your role. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question well enough there.
No, you are. You are answering my question within the challenges, because the challenges that quiet leaders may face is the fact that they may seem invisible for promotion, for other track paths. There are ways to make yourself visible, to make yourself known. And you also address being introverted, right? Many people assume, based upon my picture or my hair or the way that I seem outgoing, but after this call, I'm activating my introvert status. So I'm mostly predominantly introvert, but I found ways, techniques to activate my ambivert self so that I can make my voice known. I can talk to other people who are like-minded and have these conversations. So there are tools, techniques to get yourself out there. And introverts, ambiverts, they all have unique strengths and unique powers. It's just a way of finding what's yours and utilizing that to find your place in the workplace or within the organization to help make yourself known and make yourself visible as well. So there are ways, and I can definitely recognize with the things that you share with the challenges.
Vivian, I guess as a build on that, the mm-hmm. the thing that I often will share, I heard a comment some time ago about dials, not switches. And for someone that is a quiet leader to be able to recognize, it's not about switching on this aggressive version of yourself, but can you dial up your skills by just a couple of notches? It can make it, that's enough for people mm-hmm. to hear your voice or to take the point in the meeting. So it's not mm-hmm. necessarily having to become a completely different person, but it's about dialing up and dialing down in certain situations. And I found that imagery to be really helpful for me personally, but also for those that I work with, to bring themselves to work, be themselves, mm-hmm. but be a slightly amplified version of it in certain contexts. For example, like a performance review, they might just need to just turn the dial a couple of notches so that they really are able to communicate clearly the impact that they're having in the role, and their manager hears that. You know? Mm-hmm. So that's just an additional.
No. I agree. And also find an ally, or find a cheerleader, or find somebody within your company that, or maybe outside of your company, or coach that you can talk to, and use them as a mirror before you have that initial conversation. conversation, right? I do believe that when we practice, the more we practice, the more that we train our muscle, the more that we can try to dial down fear and all the other things that are that may hold you back, and dial up the unique you, yourself, in a different way. But also what I got from this conversation, that you can be you. I want you to be more of you than becoming someone you are not, where it may lead to purpose empty, may lead to you feeling inauthentic, and it may lead you to you not being able to connect with your team or other people. So become more of you. That's what I got from this whole conversation. Is there something else that you want to add to this as well?
Yeah, and I would say absolutely, with a sensitivity that others are trying to do the same.
Yeah.
So that humanizing piece is not about, right, I'm going to be more me and I don't care about anybody else. No, we're working strong social dynamics where we need to be sensitive to the fact that other people have got motivations and drivers and challenges and opportunities that they're trying to realize. And then I think there's real power in bringing your best self and recognizing others are trying to do the same.
I love that. What is your final wish? Because it's 2025 and within less than 5 years, we need to humanize the workplace and leadership. So what do you want to see by then?
I saw a phrase last week, which I'm going to steal. Humans aren't resources. Mm. So perhaps we could drop HR as a title, call it people or whatever it is. It's like, humans
talent
aren't
management.
Resources. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, true.
And true. I'd love it that leaders are more full of purpose. I mean, that's what I'm trying to achieve. So I'd love to see more of that in 5 years' time. Moored to strong ethical virtues.
Ooh, an emphasis on ethical. Thank you, Simon, for this conversation. It has definitely been purposeful for me and also enriching for me. And for those of you who want to connect with Simon, find him on LinkedIn or listen to his After Dinner Leadership podcast to learn more about him and about what the topics he's addressing, because it's really a good conversation, and looking forward to what's next for the future. So thank you, Simon.
It's been my pleasure being with you again, Vivian. Thank you.
Thank you. Until next time. Bye, everybody.